And I think it will be the first meeting where we having our minister with us and deputy minister and the department. You welcome. If you can allow me just to ask the members to look at the agenda for today's meeting to see if ever you're comfortable with that for adoption. We'll need a mover and a seconder. The agenda is before you. If I can ask for someone to move for the adoption of the agenda. Okay, and not the hand at the back, Mbuyane, honorable member. The seconder. If you can speak on the mic, that I'm told. Yeah. Kuluma Mbuyane.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon. My name is Sepi Mbuyane. I rise to propose that we adopt the agenda. Thank you.
Good day, Chairperson and all members. My name is Raisibe Mwatse. I move for the second of the agenda.
I don't know. We never ask for objection, do we? So obviously then I will ask that we proceed to the next item on the agenda. Are there any apologies that we may not be aware of?
Chair, we have no apologies. I think all members are present.
I think with that, Minister, I think it looks like the floor is yours. On the agenda, we actually do have the part of the briefing you need to take us through. But let me obviously talk to the agenda a bit because you know there are timelines on how we actually deal with the program. We scheduled to finish at 1800. 1800 is when the bus to the place where I sleep leaves. So which means it should be slightly earlier. So I would actually ask for some 15 minutes for members to get to the bus before 6. Thank you. Floor is yours, Minister. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. And good afternoon to all the honourable members of the committee and to the officials as well as the visitors today. And I do that on behalf of Deputy Minister Gina and myself. And I also tender the apology for Deputy Minister Majola, who is currently in Niger attending a meeting of African trade ministers to look at the African Continental Free Trade Agreement in preparation for an extraordinary summit that will be held on Sunday. He sends his apologies and his best wishes to us in the meeting. Jefferson, this is the first meeting of the committee at which we've been invited as members of the executive and as officials, and we really wish to say that we look forward to a very strong and productive relationship with the committee. Your job is to hold us to account on behalf of the people of South Africa. So we need to recognize and accept that that role is not only a constitutional one, but it's essential for us if we are to achieve our own governance program, that we are held to account and that we can come to Parliament and account for how the money that is voted from the public purse is spent. I have with me today Deputy Minister Gina, who is sitting on my right, and some of the returning members of Parliament will know Deputy Minister Gina from her Member of Parliament days. And I also have the two directors general of the two departments on my immediate left, Lionel October, and next to him, Monde Tom. We also have a team made up of deputy directors general and the chief economist of the department. And perhaps in the course of the committee's deliberations, it would be good just to introduce the committee to the work that all of them do. Recognizing that we have fairly tight time. As you've indicated, there's a bonus for us if we can finish by 5:30. And there's a guillotine at 5:45. I will, with your permission, skip a more detailed introduction today and do so at a future meeting. But I look to the chair to indicate the comfort level with that.
Well received, Minister. Thank you.
In order. And what we've come here today is the commencement of a very important relationship where we table an annual performance plan. And the executive through the department will be coming back to Parliament on a regular basis on matters relating to the annual performance plan. The document was pre-circulated. We've taken the liberty in PowerPoint form just to summarize some of the key aspects. They don't replace the document that members of Parliament have, but they may just facilitate a conversation about this. I notice that our screens are slightly fuzzy and out of focus, or my eyesight is going. So I'm going to perhaps rely a little bit more on the written document. But if we do have technical support and they're able just to sharpen the screens, that would be appreciated. Chairperson, I intend to make a few introductory remarks and sketch the context within which the annual performance plan is tabled. I will then ask each of the Directors General to briefly take the committee through the relevant slides dealing with the annual performance plan of both the DTI and the Economic Development Department. And then at that stage, Chair, I would be handing back to you. And both Deputy Minister Gina and I are available, together with the two Directors General, to take any questions that the committee has for us. So let me start then with the introductory remarks. And these are set out on page 3. And we start with just reflecting briefly on the annual performance plan. Most of the members of the committee are very experienced parliamentarians, but perhaps just to recall briefly, the annual performance plan is prepared annually by the department and approved by the executive authority. And that becomes the yardstick. We say that's what we're going to do. Parliament votes us money based on that annual performance plan. And from time to time, we then come back and report on the extent to which we've achieved it, where we've hit problems, and very importantly, what we're doing about those problems. Now, 2019 is a slightly unusual year. It's unusual year that occurs every 5 years, and that is its transition year between two administrations. And this is relevant to the discussion of the APP. And I'll come back to that in a moment. We also currently have two budget votes that are within the scope of this portfolio committee. It's the budget vote of the DTI, and it's the budget vote of the EDD. And these two entities are being merged into a single department. But until that process is complete, it will remain two budget votes. And it is anticipated that it would remain two budget votes till the end of the financial year. It's obviously ultimately the prerogative of Parliament, and Treasury will be leading the executive's thinking on this. But our plan is that these budget votes would then continue until the end of the financial year. What we're tabling today is the 2019-2020 annual performance plan. And it's based on work that was done almost exclusively in the fifth administration. So the work that was done starting from late last year, leading to the budget that was tabled by the Minister of Finance in February this year, further technical refinement and work that was done by the departments, and then presented to the incoming executive. The sixth administration, which is the one that we're in now, Its program of action will be based on the electoral mandate, it's the contract with the people of South Africa, as interpreted through the State of the Nation address, both the founding one that we have just been through some weeks ago, as well as the annual SONAS that the President will make in February each year. And it will also be based on the medium-term strategic framework. So we basically take the electoral mandate and the SONAS and we capture it in a document that speaks the language of governance and government, and that's the MTSF. So that medium-term strategic framework has already, in principle, been adopted. It's now being refined and the detail is being worked out. We then will table, or have tabled in Parliament, the two annual performance plans. As we complete the medium-term strategic frameworks, departments will now take their department strategic plans and adjust it, and we may adjust the current APPs. If we do so, I am then obliged to table the changes in Parliament. And we will then do a major review of the APP, which will come up from the start of the next financial year. So that's when you'll see the very big change in the APP, but there may be some interim changes. Of course, within the platform of the existing APPs, we will now reorient work towards the new electoral mandate and the new SONA priorities that have been sketched. And that happens immediately. Moving to slide 4, the heart of what we will do in the period ahead is captured in the SONA vision of a reimagined industrial strategy. President Ramaphosa, in setting out the overall vision for the next 5 years, placed enormous importance to industrial strategy as the means of reigniting growth and ensuring that we achieve our broader targets as set out in the National Development Plan as well as in the other government programs. We will also focus a lot of work on integration. Integration in our instance, within the new department, the merged department, as well as the entities of the department, making sure that they all connect and speak to the same vision around industrial strategy, which really is growing the economy more fairly, that's inclusive growth, and growing the economy with decent jobs. So those are key elements. And the inclusive part, of course, will relate to opportunities for young people, for women, for black South Africans, for the rurally excluded. It's providing opportunity, ensuring that more South Africans get to work. Urgency and focus will be a key hallmark of what we hope to achieve, to move the way in which all of us work, from members of cabinet, to the departments, to the agencies, to inject in it that sense of urgency that we picked up. All political parties picked up the same message from the electorate, that we wanted, the electorate expected their leaders to move with a sense of enormous urgency. We're going to build on the lessons of our experience. We succeeded in some things and they provide valuable lessons. We failed in some things, and they provide valuable lessons. So we want to be evidence-based. Look at the facts, look at what has worked, replicate those, and scale them up. We want partnership. Partnership with the private sector, and that is important because when, as I will show later, the bulk of economic activities in South Africa are driven by the private sector. And so a smart industrial policy is about increasing private investment. But it's also a partnership with workers. Workers are fundamental to ensuring that we make the transition to a more dynamic economy and a higher producing economy, both in the contribution of workers in the process and in ensuring that the results of growth are fairly and equitably distributed so that we build really a deep commitment among everybody in the economy to the same goals. There will of course be, as in any situation like this, discussion between partners about how much goes into return to capital, how much goes to wages, how much goes to taxes. That's the nature of it. But if there can be more and more of a common objective to inclusively expand the economy, then we can achieve our national goals. We want to develop a capable state. There are parts of the state that are strong, coherent, and well-run, but we recognize there are also parts of the state that are not. Sections of the state that is perhaps slow, sections that have where we've lost significant skills over the last number of years, and instead of being defensive about it, we must acknowledge where there are challenges and fix it. That's our job, is to fix the problems that are identified. So these are just some of the broad approaches. They're not a full list, but they're given an indication of how we want to work. Slide 5 deals with the economic context. And to achieve faster, inclusive growth, we will constantly be looking as our dashboard at what's happening on the global economy and what's happening in the domestic economy. On the global side, I will come to that in a moment on the detail, but the reason we look at the global economy, South Africa is a very globally integrated economy. About a third of our GDP is generated from exports, and what happens elsewhere directly affects the South African economy. On the domestic economy, we will look at things like growth, jobs, investment, sector performance, exports. Those are good indicators for us, whether we're hitting the mark. And the slides that follow provide a bit more detail. And so I take honorable members to slide number 6. Slide 6 is just a very early snapshot. We'll come in future meetings and provide to the committee more detail. But it looks briefly at global growth. And what it says is the rate of global growth has declined since 2018. And it's likely to remain relatively low or lackluster in the next few years. That's the current projections from economists globally. Growth in the advanced economies, these are the highly developed economies, has slowed. For example, United States growth has slowed from 2.9% in 2018 to a forecast of 1.9% in 2020. You see in the slides too a slowdown in growth in the European Union. And while growth in emerging and developing economy markets are expected to rise slightly, they are driven by high levels of growth in India and China. Chinese growth is still quite high, but is no longer at the level that it used to be. China used to hit double digits. It's now in the mid 6% area. And there are new headwinds to global growth. One significant headwind is how the trade talks between China and the US is resolved. It's not a matter for China and the US only, in that if the world enters a trade war where everybody raises their tariffs one against the other, it will have two effects. One effect is likely to be a significant slowing down of global growth, which affects demand for South African products that we sell abroad. And two, it is likely to lead to real tariff barriers for us into other markets. So not only will there be a lower demand there, but there will also be higher barriers to jump over to get into those markets. Turning to slide number 7, that provides a little take on the South African experience. And we've taken here since 2010. And the period late 2009 was the end of the sharpest recession we've had in the democratic period. And what that slide shows is for every 3 months, for every quarter, it has one line. And when that line is above 0.0, it means there's been growth. When it's below 0.0, it means there's been a decline. So for example, if you look at the first blue line that is at the bottom, you'll see it was in quarter one, 2014. If you look at the very last blue line in that slide, it's quarter one, 2019. That will show in that quarter we produce less than the previous quarter. Wherever it is above the line, it means the economy grew in that period. When there are two quarters, consecutive quarters of decline, it is technically a recession. If it's shallow, people call it a technical recession. If it's deep, you just dispense with the technical and you recognize it's a full-on recession. Obviously, a recession can be short or it could be long. So we thought we should just provide on slide number 8 a little storyline on recessions in South Africa, looking at the last 50 years or so. And we took the figures from about 1968, 1970. And you'll see in the blue boxes the months between a recession. So we had 78 months between a recession that occurred in 1974 and the previous one. And then you see it every time there's a gray line running from top to bottom, that shows a recession. Where it's white spaces, it shows a period of growth. And that indicates that in the last 50 years, two longest periods without recession have both been during the democratic era. The next slide shows the growth by sector and by province, and I start first by sector. And we've taken a one-year snapshot here. And the one-year snapshot shows us that in that one-year period, agriculture declined quite sharply, and business services grew fairly strongly. And so you can see there the change in the growth story sector by sector. If you look on the right-hand side, you'll see the GDP growth by province, and you'll see Eastern Cape had the lowest growth in that period, and Limpopo had the highest growth in that period. So this is year-on-year growth in GDP in a given year. Now, you'll notice, honorable members, that we've used 2017 data for provinces because provincial data lags the national data. They're not updated as regularly. And there's normally a year and a bit lag between the reporting period and the release of the data. Moving to the next area, this is a really interesting and worrying graph, and we would want to table from time to time challenging issues to the committee so that the committee can reflect on the context of our work. What this shows is from the period 1970, how well have different manufacturing sectors performed? And this is not an indication of the output of manufacturing. This says out of every 100 units that an economy produces, how much comes from factories, and that would be the manufacturing share. If you have a very big mining industry, then mining may be massive and manufacturing will be small in relative terms. If you have a very big oil industry, the same can happen. If you have a very big public sector, so what happens to other sectors contributes. So I make the point, this is not the output of manufacturing, this is the share of manufacturing of the total GDP. And honorable members will see South Africa's share of manufacturing, or manufacturing share of GDP, began to decline from 1990. There are many reasons for it. One of the most significant reasons was in 1994, the coming into effect of the new tariff regimes through the World Trade Organization. There was a set of talks called the Uruguay Round that had started in the late 80s and concluded in 1994, and that deal liberalized global trade, and South Africa made quite significant cuts in its tariffs. The second big contributor was China's entry into the global trading system. China changed the storyline for manufacturing for just about every economy. And so the trade tensions between United States and China today is principally about manufacturing. And that storyline is very significant. Right at the bottom, honorable members will see that sub-Saharan Africa's share of manufacturing remains very, very small. And that is the big challenge for the continent, how to industrialize. And the challenge for South Africa is how to re-industrialize, to claw back the strength and resilience of manufacturing in our overall economy. Moving on, slide 11 is the growth in manufacturing output. And this takes it over a number of years, a three-year period, 2017, 2018, and the first 4 months of 2019, and it was adjusted and annualized. And you will see that manufacturing grew in total. So total manufacturing, the output, the amount of widgets and glasses of cool drink and items of clothing that's been produced, taken together, if you add it all up, grew. That's the first area, total manufacturing. And then as we look at the sector breakdown, we see a more complex story. So food as a whole has gone up in that period. But if we go right to the end of the table, you'll see TVs and radio production showed a fairly sharp decline. The next slide, slide 12, gives an insight into South Africa's trade with the rest of the world. We sell things, we buy things. That's the nature of our economic structure. All countries do so. We do so probably more than average because we are mining economy in which we are a supplier of raw materials to so much of the world. So let me first start with the left-hand side. Our top 10 exports are pretty clear there. It's things like gold, platinum, and diamonds. They ores, like iron, manganese, and chrome. They cars and trucks. They coal and petrol. They iron and steel. They machinery, and so on. Our top 10 imports would be petrol. So, of course, oil is the key thing that we do buy from the rest of the world. Machinery, mechanical and electrical, vehicles, plastics, medication, medical equipment, and so on. And for the last 2 years, we've had a positive trade balance, which means basically we sell a bit more than we buy from the rest of the world. And honorable members will see the numbers there, a 178% increase in exports over the last 10 years and a 132% increase in imports over that period. If I move to the next slide, it says, okay, if this is what we sell, the question is, who do we sell it to? And it shows that our top export markets, we sell more to China than any other country, followed by Germany, United States, the UK, India, Japan, Belgium, Hong Kong, Zambia, and the Netherlands. Where do we buy from? We buy from China, Germany, United States, India, Nigeria, Thailand, the UK, Netherlands, Japan, and Italy. Honorable members will see there is some relationship between the two lists, but not complete. And all of this that I'm taking the committee through now is the base on which we look for our work on the annual performance plan. On the same slide, you will see there the trade balance with China, with Germany, with the United States. When it's above the black line, it means we sell more than we buy. If it's below the black line, it means we buy more than we sell. Now, this doesn't tell the full story. Because you could be selling more to China, but you could be selling minerals and buying value-added products, products that are more complex, more jobs are created, and so on. So that is the composition of trade, that we've got to fix the composition of trade so that you create more jobs in South Africa. We've put together a slide on trade with our BRICS partners, And we've used here the data from each of the BRICS partners. In other words, we haven't used South African data, we've used BRICS data from each of the countries to show from their national accounts. And we've done that because that allows us to also factor in the sale of gold. Our data does not provide gold sales by country. Moving on to slide 15, this tells the story of South Africa's trade balance with the rest of the African continent. And honorable members will see, we are a significant supplier of manufactured products on the continent, our continent. Most fast-growing and strong economies are characterized by this. Germany is the strongest economy in Europe, and wherever you go in Europe, the biggest supplier of manufactured goods will be Germany. Brazil is a major economy in Latin America, and its products will be found in many parts of that continent. Japan and China are big in Asia, and similarly you'll see their products are quite pervasive in their continent. Moving from trade to employment, the employment story is complex, and I will try to summarize it as briefly as possible. We have a labor force of 22.5 million people, of which 16.3 million are employed. Now, labor force refers to everybody who's either in a job or is actively looking for a job. That's called your labor force. People who are basically ready to work immediately and looking for a job or in a job. If we break it down a bit more, there are 6.1 million unemployed, but that uses the narrow definition. If you take into account that a number of South Africans have become discouraged from looking for work because they fear they're just not going to succeed, then the number jumps quite significantly. If we look at the gender composition of the employed, 6.2 million women and about 6 million young people. An interesting way to look at this is to look at the development over time, and on slide 16 at the bottom, honorable members will see from 2010 until 2019, the red line is the growth in unemployed, the green line is the growth in employed. But I said earlier the employment story is complex, and I want to illustrate it with the next slide. What the next slide shows is that we took a period from 1996 to 2018. Why 1996? It's the first year after the new democracy that we did a census. So for a year or two just after the democracy, the numbers were a bit difficult to get properly into one frame. There was still what is called the TBVC problem, which is we had nominally independent states with their own national accounts, but actually not really independent, but the numbers were collected differently. By 1996, we started to integrate all of that. And what it shows here, it's quite an interesting story. When I ask people just generally, what's the biggest problem? Why are we having so many unemployed? Often the answer is, our population is growing too fast. And yet, that's not the case. It's not the case. If you look at the numbers, since the 1996 population grew by 42%. The working age population grew faster. There are many more young people. We are a young nation. So the total working age population grew by 53%. But employment grew by 84%. So employment, the number of new jobs grew faster than population. Normally that would mean that your unemployment rate should go down because you're growing more jobs and that your people are increasing in number. But the reason why we did not make as much success in fighting unemployment is the labor force grew faster than population. And the labor force are people looking for work or working. So in a very patriarchal society, women are told your job is in the kitchen. So they're not working in the formal sector. They're not unemployed in that they're looking for a job. So they're not counted as employed or unemployed. They're outside of the labor force. In a more inclusive economy, it's recognized a woman's role is not in the kitchen. A woman's role is in society, equal with men. Women then look forward for employment. And so the labor force grows, even though your population hasn't grown. If someone lives in Lusikisiki, in the Eastern Cape, and they're in the subsistence economy, they're not regarded as employed or unemployed. The minute they leave Lusikisiki and they go look for a job in East London, then they are regarded as unemployed. The minute they find a job in East London, they're regarded as employed. But in the meantime, they were working in Lusikisiki, but it's not regarded as employed or unemployed if it's in the subsistence economy. So the South African labor market is quite complex, and we thought in the first meeting of the committee is just to provide a bit of this context, because we're going to revisit all of these areas, because we need to push up the rate of employment growth as much as we need to push up the number of the GDP growth. Right at the bottom of that slide is something very interesting. It tells the story of the labor force participation rate. So let me put it differently. In 1996, there were 44.9. Can we call it 45? Let's call it 45. 45 out of every 100 people of working age were either employed or unemployed. 45 out of 100. In 2018, 60 out of every 100, 59.4, were either employed or unemployed. This is just people of working age. And then more interestingly even than that is the next line, which measures what is called the labor absorption rate. In 1996, 36 out of every 100 people of working age were working. They were in a job. In 2018, 43 out of every 100 people were in a job. And so this is to explain what happened with our labor market, very, very different to what happens in many others. It's the nature of the South African labor force. Moving then more briefly, I'm not going to spend too much time on this one. Slide 18 is where are the jobs. So honorable members will see about 77% of the jobs are in the private sector, and 23% of the jobs are in government or in the utilities. So utilities, something like Eskom and the water boards and so on. In the private sector itself, honorable members will see each of those colors will indicate what part of the private sector it is. So you'd be able to break that down. We'll come more to that. In the next slide, total manufacturing employment is estimated at 1.8 million. This is if you take everybody that's involved in manufacturing, formal sector, informal sector, little backyard garage, a room in Alexandra, a big factory, doesn't matter where it is, all of the workers so employed amount to 1.8 million. And that is calculated. How do we know that? It's done through a survey called the Quarterly Labor Force Survey. It's where Stats SA goes knocking on doors every 3 months, and they ask questions, and then they aggregate the answers, and they're able to calculate the number, or estimate the number of people who are employed. And honorable members will see there the biggest sector in this instance is food and beverages, followed by metal products, followed by textiles, clothing and leather, and then petroleum, chemicals, plastics and rubber. If you take the top three together, then that's more than half of total employment. Just food, metal and clothing is more than half. If we look at what's happened in the last 5 years, that's slide 20, there's been a decline in the total number by 24,000 workers. That's a 0.3% decline over that period. And we provide information there of sectors that grew and sectors that declined. One of the challenges we face is not all of this is in the formal sector. And so there is another survey that Stats SA does where they, instead of knocking on households, they knock, so to speak. I don't think they physically knock, but they contact companies in the economy. So one is a pulse check of households, the other one is a pulse check of companies. And that's the quarterly employment survey. What that shows is in the formal sector of manufacturing, there's been a growth in jobs of 59,000 over the last 5 years, and slide 21 provides the breakdown of where those jobs were, which sectors grew, which sectors declined. Next, we move to investment. Investment is very important because investment is the seeds that you plant from which growth comes. And this slide shows, if you take total investment, what economists would call your gross fixed capital formation, and you express it as a percentage of your GDP. In 2016, it was 19%. In 2019, it's 18%. In other words, the economy grew in that period, but our rate of investment didn't keep up with economic growth. So that's a big challenge, because that means we are consuming more than we are investing compared to a number of years ago. Private sector investment is the single biggest part. I think the next slide will show that a little bit better. The blue is the private sector. The red is government as a whole. And the black are entities like Transnet, Eskom, and so on, what are called public corporations. So if we take that slide, then honorable members will see the share from the period 2010. The numbers at the end of it is what the growth rate has been over that period. Investment is the next, foreign investment is the next one. Foreign investment is part of our investment drive. Our biggest focus is on domestic investment because that's the bulk of our investment. And the advantage of domestic investment is that, the dividends stay in the country. So you use the savings of the South African people, and the reward for that also returns back to South Africans. But our savings rate is too low, which means that we need to borrow other people's savings, which is what foreign investment is. And over this period, honorable members will see in the last administration from 2014, those are the numbers. You see a significant decline in investment in 2015, foreign investment, 2015, 2016, and 2017. Last year, it bounced back, and it bounced back even though globally investment levels were down. But South Africa's was a bit of a standout. Now, we've raised this on behalf of Deputy Minister Gina, myself, and the two directors general to sketch the context within which the two departments in this budget votes want to deploy the resources of the state to try to assist in turning the story around. It cannot do so alone. It needs the support of workers and businesses, very important. But the state can do its part to lift the rate of job growth, GDP growth, and economic inclusion. And so this is a dashboard for us of where we are. And over the next 5 years, the honorable members will be measuring the impact we're having on this dashboard. Are we changing it? Where are we changing it? And are we changing it fast enough? Now, what we have next in the presentation is a brief summary of the DTI department's annual performance plan. The detailed document has been circulated. And I'm going to ask Director General October just to take the committee briefly through the slides followed by the slides covering the Economic Development Department's APP, and we would then be able after that to take any questions. Chair, with your permission, if you're happy, that we then go straight to the APPs.
Thanks. Chair, I'll very briefly take you through the slides, if we can. I'll give a high-level summary, as indicated, of the strategic objectives. We will be providing more detailed presentations when we do different divisions and entities of the DTI. We'll unpack it more broadly. I'll also then just outline the key interventions and then the budget. Very briefly, if we can summarize DTI as, let's say, three broad objectives. The one is, as mentioned by Minister, is industrialization. We need to build a strong manufacturing sector, because in all economies, your manufacturing sector is your driver of growth, but it's also the sector that gives you high-paying jobs, decent work, and also increases value add in your economy. So that's our most important objective. The second one is transformation, because, as you know, of the high levels of exclusion, our economy is an abnormal economy, very low levels of participation, high levels of inequality, which means a very small domestic market, low purchasing power, so low supply, low demand, and so transformation is actually a growth objective, and it links to building our economy. So we want to overcome the high levels of inequality in our economy. And the third one is the state as a regulator. We regulate a number of key areas from competition or in EDD, but in DTI we have corporate regulation, we have consumer regulation, we have regulation for copyright, and so on. So those are the three strategic objectives, and all our programs are linked around these objections. So if I can, you'll see there we'll have four KPIs for our first one, and then the bulk of our KPIs, key performance indicators, is you'll see 16 key performance indicators relates to manufacturing. So that is the heart of our growth and transformation strategy. And the third indicator is really about improving the conditions, as I indicated, for consumers, artists, and to open new markets. Those are the key areas. If I then go to the planned intervention, our first one, as I indicated, and the bulk of our budget goes around this one, and the number of indicators, is what we call our Industrial Policy Action Plan. That's the IPAP mentioned there. That is a comprehensive program to grow the manufacturing sector, and especially key sectors in that, labor-intensive sectors like clothing, textile, and footwear, agro-processing, but also other key high-value sectors like autos and so on. So that's all laid out, and we have a range of industrial IPAP, what we call interventions. The third area is one of, obviously, the economy depends on a lot of other inputs. You need good transport system, logistics systems, you need energy, and so on. And we have to play the role of facilitating that for investors. So what you will hear in our future presentation is we've set up Invest South Africa, which is a one-stop shop where we actually, when we bring investment into the country, we facilitate those other initiatives as well. So that's our strategic goal related to that. Then if we can go very specifically into what we are doing. So we want to create a value of projected investment leverage is the target there we've set is 18 billion rand. The number of projected jobs, new jobs and retained jobs is 18,000 jobs. That's one of our key performance indicators. And then the number of enterprises we help as a department through our various interventions is 900 companies and enterprises that we want to directly assist. The second strategic goal is, of course, as I indicated, our market is very small. It is, as I said, it is abnormally small for a population of 57 million. Our sort of, let's say, consumption in that economy is about one-third the size of South Korea, which has a similar population. So we need to grow our export markets. We rely on export markets for growth, and therefore you will see there we focus on opening up global markets, regional and global relations. So
The big negotiations we will be completing, and we have indicators for all of them. We've got the tripartite free trade area. We've got the continental free trade area. We've got our big agreement with the European Union, what is called here the EPA, Economic Partnership Agreement. And then we have different bilaterals, the SACU India preferential trade area, and so on. So these are other ones that we will, as I said, we will be engaging in these negotiations, and we will table you with regular reports on those progress in that. The other area under strategic goal 2 is all our big markets that we have. For example, there's the BRICS partnership, so we have strategic partners there. We service that relationship. We've got the G20, and the most important one is, as you can see, one of our biggest markets is the United States. There we rely on what is called the AGOA, African Growth and Opportunities Act, and that is what we have to maintain that market access to the U.S., and as you know, the U.S. is becoming very protectionist. They're closing those markets, so we have to be constantly engaged in keeping that a market. Our target there is to create, is to increase value-added exports 4.25 billion through our one of our programs, especially for small exporters, small medium enterprises. They are direct targeted for billion. And the number of companies we want to assist through facilitating foreign trade, through exhibitions, through pavilions and so on, 864 companies that we will support through this program. The other big part of our industrial intervention is strategic goal 3, which is what we call the Black Economic Empowerment and the Special Economic Zones program. In this period, we want to open one new or designate one new SEZ. Currently, we have 10, and as you know, it's quite a process to get a special economic zone going. You need to recruit investors. You need to do environmental impact assessment. You need to do proper feasibility studies to ensure that the zone is viable and that they have a clear business strategy, and that our is to have an additional zone. We will probably, because of the strong interest now from provinces and some of the successes of this program, we will probably exceed that amount because we're getting higher levels of cooperation now, but that is our target. And then, as you know, Black economic empowerment needs to be accelerated, and we will be strongly monitoring. We've said we've got the Black Economic Empowerment Commission, which is a champion of that. And then under the Black Industrials Program, you will see there that program has proceeded very well. We've targeted 80 interventions, and here you will see it's non-financial this time round. In the previous years, we've targeted quantities. We've done about over 100 black industrialists, 140 or so, but now we want to focus on quality. But also we're finding from these industrialists, their biggest problem is now no longer on their productivity side or machinery and equipment and so on. It's the question of opening market access for them, both in the domestically with the big retailers. So, for example, part of these interventions will be opening up relationships with Pick and Pay, Woolworths, and others for them to enter these markets. So the area, as I reach to conclusion, is strategic goal 4, which, as I indicated, is our regulatory function. There, the major in the last in the fifth administration and fifth parliament, we had quite a busy year with a number of bills and laws being passed. This one, our priority for this year will be the Companies Amendment Bill, and there are some amendments there where we can enhance that Companies Act. We then also want to do four impact assessments, and then, as you know, we need to popularize these programs for people to use these legislation, especially in consumers, so 24 education and workshops. Then the final area is nothing can be done without a capable administration and a capable state. We hope to maintain our current record of clean audits, and we also hope to maintain our level of performance. So our big target there is, again, 100% eligible creditor payments within 30 days. We have a track record of always achieving 100%, and we will also pay that within 15 days in practice. But that is our target. Women empowerment, we want to maintain our current status of 50% women in senior management positions, and then also the higher target for employment with disability. Finally, the budget, I won't go into that. We will again have an opportunity to present it in more detail, but as you know, it is in it is 9.5 billion. It is divided into the areas, and you will see the big area there is industrial development and incentive administration. And finally, just under that, there's about five key programs and sectors we support under this incentive development and administration: clothing and textiles, autos, business process outsourcing, film, and agro processing. And we hope to add the new one of metal fabrication. And that's our total budget if we break it down by program. It's 10.1 billion.
Chairperson, thank you very much, members of the committee. I'll give a brief summary of the Economic Development APP for the financial year 2019-20. I'll provide a high level of the strategic imperatives, which is the vision of the department. I will also talk to the six strategic objectives of the department that are performed through three programs. I will also talk to the key interventions that are planned for the year under question. And then thereafter, I'll talk to the budget voted for that specific year. The vision of the department is creating a decent work for all. And we do so through ensuring transformation of the economy and inclusive growth. As I indicated, we have got six objectives. Mainly those objectives actually are targeted to actually to achieve the mission that we have as a department of coordinating the efforts of government departments, the state entities, and the civil society to effect economic development. We also improve the alignment between economic policies, the government political and economic objectives and its mandate, and thirdly, we actually promoted the broad goal of advancing the economic development. We do so through ensuring that there are decent work opportunities that are created. Department, you'll actually see that it has got about 16 KPIs, which are actually guiding the performance of staff to achieve the six strategic objectives. And as I indicated, those will be under three programs. I'll take each intervention. Move to slide 45. I'll take each intervention in turn. The first objective is actually to ensure that there is a good governance in the department, because that will actually give confidence to society. The intervention that we have set for ourselves is is actually to ensure that we achieve an unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General. How do we do that? We actually do that by systematically addressing all the issues that were raised by the Treasury in the previous year. We also make sure that there is a high level of standards that we've actually set in the performance of those KPIs that I spoke about. The second objective of the department is actually to coordinate the job drivers and the implementation of the new growth path economic strategy in supporting the national development plan of the country. Move to slide 46. The interventions that we've set for ourselves, right, to ensure this coordination of job drivers, we produce analytical and policy and public policy advocacy programs. We also promote the job drivers through the coordinating with other departments and promoting investment with regulators and engaging stakeholders on the jobs and the growth, as well as supporting provinces to meet their targets, including the alignment of the provincial economic development APPs with the national agenda. The third objective we have set for ourselves is actually to page 47, is to facilitate social dialogue and the implementation of the social accords. The intervention, we monitor and support the implementation of the Green Economy Accord. We support the Youth Accord, particularly for black women, to ensure their access to employment and business opportunities. The third one, we actually produce progress reports on the actions taken by government and social partners to effect the Youth Employment Accord. The fourth objective, out of the six objectives, is the infrastructure development. We coordinate infrastructure development and it strengthens its positive impact on the economy and the citizens. This is a function that has since been transferred to the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. But how we do that, we actually provide 18 SIPs, that is strategic integrated projects. We provide those to cabinet with detailed dashboards on the performance under those SIPs. We implement decisions that are made by government, by cabinet, and the PICC. The fifth objective of the six objectives is the industrial finance. Industrial financing, we do that through the IDC. We promote productive investment and industrial financing and entrepreneurship for jobs and inclusive growth. The interventions that are done by the department, we do a lot of unblocking and facilitating investment generally, and also infrastructure specifically. We promote the transformation of the economy through supporting of township enterprises. We also monitor the funding efforts by the DFIs, both at the ministerial and departmental and department. They actually have an oversight engagement, regular oversight engagement with our department, with our ITC, in terms of its corporate plan and also their governance. Last but not least of these objectives, which is the sixth objective, we promote competition, trade, and economic regulation. The regulation, we do it particularly through the Competition Commission. The other regulator is the Competition Tribunal and the ITEC. The interventions that we have around that objective is the oversight ministerially and the department over those three entities. We also engage particularly the Competition Commission in terms of the mergers and acquisitions, the market inquiries that they conduct, like data market inquiry, grocery, retail market inquiries, all such inquiries, and also the challenges that are faced by the economy in terms of the prohibited practices in the economy. We're also implementing a new legislation, which is the Competition Amendment Act of 2018, which is really meant to deconcentrate the economy and open up participation in terms of jobs and also business enterprises. The budget for the department for the 2019-20 is about a billion rands. That budget is split into one, the administration, about 90 million. Mainly that goes to the SOE of the department. The second program gets about 37 million. The last program, which has got the transfers made to the entities, you'll see that the bulk of the budget is about 918 million, which is almost over 80% of the budget is made up of the transfers to the entities. The department, for its specific internal purposes, it actually gets about 147 million for the year under question. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much through the chairperson to the two directors general for setting out the details of the APP. So together those constitute what we're tabling. Obviously, had the two departments been completely separate as in the past, these annual performance plans would be implemented completely separately. What the Directors General have put together under the guidance of the Deputy Ministers and myself is an approach where they will begin the integration as quickly as possible so that they can build on synergies between the two different annual performance plans. And as I had indicated, Chair, we are looking at aligning this as rapidly as possible to the medium-term strategic framework that gives effect to the electoral mandate that guides government. So that then represents the tabling from our side of the two documents. Thank you very much.
We do have a bit of time. If tea was ready, we'd actually do that. But I think it will be in order that we try and pick up on the clarity questions or comments from the honourable members, and then we actually take it from there. Okay. Amendation. Okay. We'll take with start with honourable member Montashe.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon. And Chair, I must just apologize for coming late to the committee. Just something that was beyond my control. Chair, I have a few questions that I need to pose to the department. Whilst I appreciate the presentation they've offered us today, and that we very much appreciate the effort by the President of the country to speak to his promise to the country that he was going to reduce the number of departments. And we see that in practice in the two departments that are in front of us today. Chairperson, I have just a few concerns or a clarity-seeking question. For me, Program 8, which I think is amongst the critical in terms of the mandate of the department and in terms of the priorities outlined in the SONA on the 20th of June, of increasing as well, facilitating in investment into the South African economy. However, we notice a decrease in the allocation for these programs. Can we be explained? In November 2018, Chairperson, the then minister announced the extension of the automotive production and development program. How will this affect this allocation in the incentive development and administration program? One of my favorite policies of this current government is the triple BEE, which some people hate with their passion. Chairperson, I just want to check with the department whether the 61.7 million allocated to that program is enough to do what we expect that a commission to do, because there's a lot of people who are avoiding to work as per the regulations and the acts that we have enacted in this parliament. Because I see that that commission has having a huge burden on its shoulders, because we were talking of inclusive economy, which it must enforce. Again, Chairperson, the budget for the NCR as they had applied for an increase in their budget in the past. I'm not sure if this has been done. I just want to be reminded, Chair. For now, Chair, I'll pause there.
I'll ask for Honourable Member Thring, Cuthbert and Mark Fearson in that order. Thring
is correct, Chair. It's T-H-R-I-N-G. Though you are excused because my surname is not the easiest of surnames. Thank you, Chair. Honourable Minister, thank you also for an excellent presentation. I think certainly it's a presentation that I think all departments need to have a look at. It gives a very clear, very concise picture of where we are and what the economy is doing globally and both locally. Honourable Minister, I've noticed that Department of Trade and Industry has obtained a clean audit. However, certain entities, it's moved from four entities 2014-15 to seven entities 2017, commendable. So we continue to see a growing trend in terms of the auditor general in clean audits. But the audit appears to have excluded SABS and NRCS. In some of the reading that I did was given to us, I'm a new member coming on to the committee. In some of the reading that I did, the SABS board was disbanded because of some challenges. What is the process of sorting out whatever challenges have been found with SABS, and if they are also with the NRCS, what is the progress that has been made in sorting out whatever challenges there are? Because if there are challenges there, it can affect, we were to include these particular entities, we would not be having the Auditor General being so flowery with these words. Our Gini coefficient indicates that South Africa is the most unequal nation in the world, one of the highest Gini coefficients, overtaking Brazil, which I think a few years ago had the highest Gini coefficient. And yet, after 25 years, and now I want to come to triple BEE. We, as the ACDP, have recognized the inequalities that have existed and they needed to be addressed. But my challenge with triple BEE is that it has not been broad. It has been fairly narrow. Because there are still large percentages of our population that have been excluded from the mainstream economy. Large percentages. How then do we take broad-based black economic empowerment and ensure that we include those who have been excluded? Now we can say over the last, previously we could say because of apartheid, but now we're going to have to say over the last 25 years under the new administration. And so certainly we need to see, if we want to reduce the GDP, the Gini coefficient, we have to then see and begin to do an introspection with regards to the operation, the implementation of broad-based black economic empowerment. To Mr. October, you mentioned that there has been some 100 or so black industrialists that have been assisted over the past few years. My question is, what has been the success rate of that assistance? So if we've assisted 100 or so black industrialists, are they still operating? Are those industrialists or the businesses that they've established still in operation? Sometimes our problem is we give assistance and we set up our people to fail, where there's no follow through. We can give X amount of money, grants, but there's no follow through in terms of the necessary assistance to actually take it from ground zero to the next level. And then finally, regulation, I think you also touched on regulation. and the fact that we actually need to look at improving regulation, particularly with regards to business, and making it easier for business to do business, particularly if we're wanting foreign direct investment. President, in his State of the Nation address, spoke about a one-stop shop, spoke about how easy it has become in a matter of 24 hours a business was registered. So my question then is, how easy is it not just to register a business, but also continue to do business? Because many businesses complain about over-regulation, where they would rather move to capital-intensive activities than labor-intensive. So those are my comments. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I'd like to start off by honing in on the Minister's situational analysis. I think that in some regards the analysis provided was slightly out of date, because if we've seen the recent quarter one labour force survey for 2019, we've had a contraction of 3.2% in the economy. It's also the worst in 10 years. And therefore, to try and manipulate the stats in a particular way to make the picture look better than what it is not necessarily the most honest or the most forthright thing to do. Secondly, if you note on page number 17 of the APP document, you will note that there's been a 33.6% decrease in agriculture for the period of 2018. Surely that can be attributed to the insecurity around property rights and the land question that we currently need to deal with in South Africa. These are some of the things that, whilst not within the mandate of our department, affect the work of the department itself. We also have some industries such as agriculture, forestry and fisheries that were down for 13.2%, mining down 10.8%, and even the golden egg, which is the automotive industry, was in fact down itself. If we look at another point, we are ranked 82 out of 190 countries in terms of the ease of doing business index. Surely that's something that we need to focus on going forward in order to roll out the red carpet for businesses so that they can come and invest in our country and create jobs. Whereas countries who have embraced market-led reforms, such as Mauritius and Rwanda, found themselves at 20 and 29 respectively. Chair, another concern that I have is there's been a lot of mention of Mao Zedong, Karl Marx, as well as the One Belt and Road Initiative, particularly in the SONA responses. This is concerning because we've noticed with other African countries who've sold their sovereignty to China, they now find themselves with hefty loans that they're not able to afford and able to budget for, thus leaving them at the might and will of the Chinese government. Chair, if we move then on to page 35 of the APP for DTI, I would like to then just request if DG October could please supply us with the roles and functions of the people who have been suspended within the department. And then lastly, if we move over to the budget, there were just a couple of questions I wanted to ask surrounding that. Give me 1 minute. Sorry, Chair. There's a series of notes that I've made here, and through lack of sticky notes, I've made it quite difficult for myself. Chair, I just wanted to understand the overall decrease in incentives themselves, and then particularly with relation to the service investment incentive, why that has decreased. It seems as if there's been a period from 2016-2017 financial year up until this period where these kinds of mechanisms in the budget have slowly been appropriated less money. So if that could just be explained. Then for the second report on the APP, the Economic Development Department, I just have one comment. And whilst I understand that it largely plays a coordinating role, Chairperson, I do not understand how KPIs can reflect in the name of reports and certain other mechanisms, which I don't believe are actually an effective KPI themselves. We need to be measuring this against jobs created. We need to be measuring this against money that's invested. We can't simply have it as a result of reports and the like, and I think that was probably the problem with the department over the last 10 years. So maybe to just give more meat to that, and particularly the function as it's merged into the DTR, I think that we would welcome that. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honourable McPherson.
Thank you very much. And congratulations again, Minister, on your appointment. It's good to see a fellow colleague from KZN in the department as your Deputy Minister, and so I wish her well as well. I welcome the announcement that a major review of the APPs are going to take place. To me it sounds like it's going to take place sort of during this current financial year and going forward. Because in honesty, Minister, I think over the last 5 years, the Department of Trade and Industry, it's been an attempt to plug a number of leaks in the economy without dealing with the structural problem that is the weakness of the dam wall, which is continuously being eroded by politics, by factional arguments, by ideological arguments. And hopefully a review of the APP could start to stabilize that dam wall of the economy. And I certainly look forward to seeing the reimagined industrial strategy, which Mr. October kindly presented at the ANC-NEC, and hopefully we as a department will get to see that after the ANC got to see it. I want to support you on your views of an evidence-based approach to the economy. And towards industrialization, because I think far too often it's been couched in rhetoric. We throw around meaningless words. We seek to appropriate blame to groups of people and to even the private sector, which you have strongly said that you want to see as a partner in development. And that's certainly a great way to see the private sector, because for far too often they're seen as the enemy and not the solution. And I know that some of my colleagues on my right will express themselves as being pro-poor, but you can't be pro-poor unless you're pro-business, because business and the private sector are the people that are investing in this economy and creating jobs in the economy. And I think that one of the most fascinating slides that you produced today was the investment by sector. And it is only the private sector that is investing in our economy. And Minister, I give you our word that when your own colleagues try to undermine you in this quest to support the private sector and to be evidence-based, we certainly from the Democratic Alliance will work with you to push those agendas forward. And we do need a capable state, because I want to see a minister who's prepared to go to cabinet and fight for industry, to fight for the job creators, to fight for the sectors that can create employment and invest in our economy. For far too often we have ministers that sit around the cabinet table and talk about I don't know what, but it's certainly not about growing this economy and creating jobs. So we need a champion in government that's prepared to build that capable state and to ensure that SOEs are not a stumbling block to economic growth, but in fact aid economic growth. Onto your manufacturing graph, which as a share of GDP, quite rightly you point out, has decreased over the last 30 years. But I don't think it has to be that way, Minister. I think that we can turn that sector around. We can reindustrialize. But if we want to do that, we have to start asking the tough questions about how do we get government out of the way in holding back businesses and the economy from industrialize. How can we cut the strangulation of costs, administered costs, that government continues to rope around businesses' neck. I think that there's a difference, quite frankly, between the rate of employment versus the rate of unemployment. And for every single year over the last 10 years, unemployment has crept up. That is a fact. We can't get away from it. So I think that is what must be our guiding star as to chipping away at the rate of unemployment. And if we want to see unemployment decrease, Minister, we need to see manufacturing, I think, as a key driver of that. We need to start to find why our programs, like the MCEP program, one of the most successful programs in this in the department, which I've given the DG much public praise for, but it seems to have come to an end. It seems there's no forward projection. We in this committee have been asking for 5 and 10 year plans to see that program going forward, because it gives industry the forward planning ability that they desperately need, but we're just not able to do it at the moment. So what should we be measuring ourselves against, Minister? What is the one thing that your department should be held accountable for? Well, I think it's jobs. I think that's the only KPI that I'm interested in seeing, is how many jobs are we able to create through the private sector every single year. And every department in the DTI should be speaking to that objective, whether it's the SABS, the NRCS, whether it's our incentive programs, every single government regulation, the CIPC, should be focusing on that and that only. And if they have no idea how to do that, then they need to remove themselves in terms of being a board, sitting on the board, or the CEO. But we cannot have entities that strangle regulation. It's just not going to cut it if we want to go forward. So I think, Minister, on those, we need to work together as a committee as to how are we going to get to those objectives. We need to put on the table, DG, what are going to be the bills that are going to come to this committee. I myself am not going to allow to wait to the fourth year for us to start dealing with the serious bills. When are we going to have a new sugar amendment bill placed before this committee? When are we going to have a new national credit amendment bill before this committee? When are we going to get the gambling amendment bill before this committee? 10 years we've been waiting for that bill. When are we going to see the liquor amendment bill before this committee? You want to only table one bill in this next financial year. There's some very pressing bills that need to come before us. And then, Minister, finally, I just want to say, you know, all of these sorts of things are going to be undermined unless you are proactive on some of the crisis that unfolds without much planning. And I think the sugar industry is one of those. And I'm in agreement with my colleague, the Honourable Mantashe. Where they're facing an industry crisis, this committee resolved that the Minister in the Fifth Parliament would intervene, would do something, would get involved, and unfortunately he went to go and sail his boat in Langebaan. And that's just not good enough. We need you to pick that up, Minister. There's some urgent interventions that need to be made, and we need to tackle this thing head on together. So, and I just want to know what are going to be those interventions. Thank you.
It was comments and or questions. I think in the input that we have gotten, the questions we have, it may be ideal to have something to drink, then actually regroup again. Can we have just a 15 minutes break for tea? Tea is ready. Thank you very much.